ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw, ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Iron Bowl Friday, everybody. Tomorrow, the big game here down south, not the Ohio State-Michigan game. Lance Daw, Noah Gardner with you. Lance, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing great, Noah. How are you doing? How was your Thanksgiving, man?
I'm full. I filled up the plate, man. It was a good time. It was also the first time that I've seen my grandparents in like 2 years. So that was really awesome to be able to go and see some family members that I haven't gotten to see in quite some time. So it was a really good Thanksgiving. How was yours?
Mine was good. Mine technically is not happening until Sunday, whenever my entire family can get together, because we were not able to all get together yesterday. But I was able to, you know, just hang out, watch Auburn beat Loyola Chicago, watch some Egg Bowl action. It was a really relaxing Thursday.
And yesterday wasn't even a classic Egg Bowl with, you know, trashy drama.
It felt like a sedated Egg Bowl. It was like there wasn't really a whole lot going on, and Ole Miss just kind of controlled the game. It was not what I was looking for. But you know what? It's nice to watch college football, meaningful college football, on a Thursday afternoon for sure.
Nobody busted out a fire hydrant celebration.
Matt Corral didn't punch anybody. I mean, where was the action, man?
The Egg Bowl is one of the best rivalries in all of college football. But not from a game or stakes perspective,
right?
Because of the hatred.
Yeah, it's absolutely because of the passion that some of these fans have. I wouldn't say it's on the level of Ohio State, Michigan, Auburn, Alabama, but certainly Ole Miss and Mississippi State, they do not like each other very much.
I don't know, man. I know some Mississippi State fans. I know some Ole Miss fans. And, of course, everybody's going to say that their rivalry is that intense. But I think in some ways the vitriol, and looking at the history of the Ole Miss-Mississippi State rivalry, looking at the Egg Bowl, I think in some ways the vitriol is a lot worse than the Iron Bowl. Mm. It's probably in the same territory as Ohio State-Michigan. I mean, Ohio State doesn't use the letter M for a whole week. That's pretty difficult to do. I don't know how many people know how many words have the letter M in it and how many sentences that you use. That's pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. That changes the whole trajectory of the human language. Yeah. But the Egg Bowl definitely has some intense history behind it. And at the time that Ole Miss recently was receiving all of those allegations, you saw the depths of it in terms of the recruiting trail and how there was a lot of tattling on each other and whatnot. I think there is a lot of hatred there, even more so than the Auburn-Alabama rivalry. Because somehow we're at least respectful for 365 days a year. I don't think there's a whole lot of respect there between Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the state of Mississippi.
You're saying that Auburn and Alabama fans are...
We live better with each other than Mississippi State and Ole Miss fans do, I think.
I can understand that. I can get behind that. I would not say as an Auburn fan that has grown up in this rivalry, I would not say that Mississippi State and Ole Miss fans hate each other more on game day. I don't think
that's fair.
Even during the week, even during the month, shoot, football season in general. I don't think Ole Miss fans hate Mississippi State fans more than Auburn fans hate Alabama fans or vice versa. But I do understand the year round just disdain for each other. I can understand that.
Maybe there's just more games than I can think of with just trashy things happening in it.
Punching
in the
dudes in the face. Yeah. Kicking people, throwing people to the ground. You know, that doesn't
happen to be a dog. Yeah,
that doesn't,
on a fire hydrant.
That does not happen in the Iron Bowl. Doesn't happen. Now, people will poison our trees. That has happened.
That's a good point.
Don't see that happening in the Egg Bowl.
That's a good point. 334-321-1390 is the number to call. Your thoughts on the Iron Bowl. We are taking score predictions. We are taking your thoughts. Anything going on in the sports world, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Find us on Twitter at ESPN 106.7, at Fox Sports 983. Want to talk to you a little bit about our weekend ESPN radio schedule coming up tomorrow. This is college football right here on ESPN 106.7. You got Virginia Tech at Virginia at 2 p.m. out of Charlottesville, Virginia. And then in the evening at 5:30, Texas A&M at LSU in Baton Rouge. A&M still has not beaten LSU in Tiger Stadium. That's a streak that I think may be coming to an end this year. A&M breaking a lot of streaks, such as Auburn winning at College Station mm-hmm. all the time. That's changed. Alabama doing the same thing. That changed. A&M's breaking a lot of firsts this year. So that's a look at this weekend's ESPN football schedule. Live game broadcast on ESPN 106.7 are presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Kia of Auburn, University Ace Hardware, and Franklin Tire and Auto. Of course, we're going to start today's show off breaking down the Iron Bowl, just like we do many other games this season, the position group breakdown, and we're going to tackle it from the offensive side of things first. Basically, this is how it works. We're going to look at the quarterback position group, who's got the better quarterback. We're going to look at the running backs, who's got the better running backs, and so on and so forth. So let's start it off with the most obvious position group, maybe, on the entire board here, quarterbacks.
It's Bryce Young by a mile. Even if Bo Nix was playing in this game, I would say it's Bryce Young by a mile, because what he has had to deal with the offensive line pressure that Alabama has allowed so far this season, the fact that he has had to extend plays calmly and not make terrible decisions, and he's come out with such an impressive stat line so far this season, is just phenomenal to me. I think that it's really impressive to watch him play football, especially as a freshman. Like I mentioned earlier, Alabama, the offensive line has not been playing very well so far this season. They're 10th in the SEC in sacks allowed per game. They give up about 2.5 per contest. He has been able to step up in the pocket, deliver balls into tight windows, throw the ball downfield with incredible accuracy. He's got 38 touchdowns to 3 interceptions on the season. Even if Bo Nix was playing in this game, I still think you have some inconsistencies in Nix's game, despite the fact that he has been playing better as the season has gone along this year. But TJ Finley, not even close to the level of Bryce Young, at least at this point in his career.
This may be the best Alabama passing quarterback that Auburn has ever played in terms of pure talent. And look, football is vastly different than it was 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was. Those quarterbacks, I don't think, were nearly as talented of passers as quarterbacks that we have today, based off of the fact that the offense did not ask them to do that. That was not what the offense was asking you to do. You're going to look at Terry Bradshaw's numbers, just an example here. You're going to bring up Terry Bradshaw's all-time numbers. They don't look good. They don't look good, but he's a Hall of Famer and he won a lot of Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. The game was very different back in the day. You break down Terry Bradshaw's all-time career numbers in the NFL. He had 212 touchdowns to 210 interceptions.
Pretty good.
Like, man, that is not how things look these days.
That's almost a 1-to-1 split. That's impressive.
He had a 51.9 completion percentage.
It's a Bo Nix stat line right there.
It's a lot worse. But he had 32 rushing touchdowns. I mean, the football was very different back then. But that's a 13-year career.
Mm-hmm.
Passing quarterbacks, it didn't exist the way that it does now. The game has evolved so much, and developing the quarterback position has changed so much over the years. That's why I think it is very possible and very pertinent to say that Bryce Young is the best passing quarterback at Alabama maybe we've ever seen. And he's done it with literally no offensive line. He's got help at receiving and his receiving core and out of the backfield. He's got a lot of help there. Alabama's skill positions are phenomenal. But he's done it without an offensive line this year. This is also one of the worst. This may be the worst offensive line that Nick Saban's had at Alabama since he first got there.
Well, I'll also say he's a freshman on top of all this. And then on top of that, I don't think his skill position players are as good as Alabama has had in the past. This may be one of the worst groups of skill position players I think Alabama's had under Nick Saban. It's not the worst, I don't think, but it's one of the worst. Because you've got Jamison Williams. John Metchie has not developed into what people thought he would. And I don't think Brian Robinson, he may be the worst starting running back Alabama's had in a very long time.
I disagree with you on that one.
Who's worse?
I thought Eddie Lacy's worse. I think
Really?
Eddie? Yeah, I think Bo Scarborough and Damian Harris are worse.
I thought those two guys were better.
They also were playing in front of a better offensive line. And we'll get down to running backs in a little bit, but I think very highly of Brian Robinson.
Okay.
And now his numbers, 4.9 yards per carry, is not the most attractive thing in the world, but I think that's a lot to do with offensive line play. He's making a lot of guys miss. He's broken more tackles this year than Tank has by a long shot. And his yards after contact are still at about 3.5 to 4 yards after contact. I mean, he makes a lot of guys miss, creates his own space. He's a good receiving back. I think Brian Robinson does more than Damian Harris and Bo Scarborough and then Eddie Lacy.
I think Damian Harris was more athletic than Brian Robinson. I also think he was a little bit more explosive than Brian Robinson. Bo Scarborough, I don't think he was more explosive, but I definitely think that he was a little bit more physical. He was not the starting guy, I don't think, that you would want, though. I agree with you. I don't think that Robinson is the worst back that Bama's had, but I can definitely think of a few that have started that have been better than him in the Nick Saban era.
100%. So, Mark Ingram, Trent Richardson, Najee Harris last year, Derrick Henry, 100%.
My point being is,
this is a middle of the pack.
These guys are objectively good players, right? Like,
no,
the guys
they're great players.
They're really good players. It's just I don't think that collectively this is one of the worst skill position groups Alabama's had in a while, especially compared to what we've seen over the last 2 years.
At wide receiver, sure, yeah, and running back too, because of Najee. Najee was phenomenal. Najee's hot take, and you heard me say this back around draft time. I think Najee was the best running back that Nick Saban had.
I think he should have won the Heisman. I really do.
You look at the numbers, there's a lot to support that. There really is. There's a lot to support that. There's a lot to support any one of those three guys, Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, or Najee Harris winning the Heisman last year. But, yes, 100% Bryce Young by a mile when you're comparing the two quarterback positions. I really think that by far this may be the best passing quarterback that Auburn's ever faced, even better than Tua. Tua didn't handle the blitz very well. Bryce Young is completing 66% of his passes against the blitz. And when the pocket's kept clean, he's completing 78% of his passes. And Tua was throwing to four future first-rounders in his wide receiver core, whereas right now there may just be one. Mm-hmm. There may be two, but at the end of the day, like that's still half of what Tua was throwing to. Mm-hmm. And his number three, there is a huge drop-off to Slade Bolden.
Yep.
A huge drop-off. Well, at one point, it was Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy dominating, and his drop-off was to a future Heisman winner and another guy who got drafted in front of the future Heisman winner, right? Like, what we saw at Alabama at receiver over the last 2 or 3 years was maybe the best receiving corps we've ever seen in all of college football all time over the stretch of that time period. So I can't knock Bryce Young for anything that he's doing this year.
No.
He has been extremely phenomenal.
Right. And all of that, what I was saying earlier, is to say Bryce Young has put up ridiculous numbers for the situation that he's been in so far this season.
Right.
So it's I think that it's for sure, 100%, Bryce Young's the better quarterback in this matchup. And I don't know if I would take anybody else in college football over him. I'm trying really hard to think. Is there another quarterback that you would take Bryce Young over in any game?
That I wouldn't take Bryce Young over? I would take Bryce Young over pretty much any quarterback in college football.
I can't think of another guy. He's the best quarterback in college football right now, in my opinion.
He's better than Matt Corral. He's better than, well, we haven't even seen JT Daniels in a while. I remember everybody talking about him coming into this year. So, yeah, I'm with you. Bryce Young's the best quarterback in college football, and I think that should definitely qualify him to win the Heisman. But unfortunately, I do think it is shading towards C.J. Stroud right now at Ohio State. But I don't think he's had to deal with nearly the same adversity. And also, he's got a lot better skill position players that he's working with. You talk about Travion Henderson at running back. He's probably pound for pound on the same caliber as Brian Robinson. I don't know which one of those I would take more. But he's also getting to throw to Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave at wide receiver, which those guys are two future first-round picks at wide receiver. So he's got a little bit more to play with in the secondary, or not in the secondary, the receiving core, and then the secondaries he's playing against aren't nearly as good as well. Let's move on to running backs. Which backfield do you like more?
Well, I think that I like, if Auburn would feed him the ball more, I like Tank Bigsby in any offense, but I think I'm going to have to go with Brian Robinson just based off the numbers that he's put up as opposed to Tank Bigsby so far this season. Something that you brought up, he's broken more tackles than Tank. He averages less yards per carry, but I think that whenever you watch the film between him and Tank, I think he is a little bit more physical than Tank, and on top of that, he's also a little bit shiftier, I think.
He's bigger than Tank.
So overall, I think he's almost just a better version of Tank Bigsby, just a bigger version of Tank
Bigsby. He's 6'1", 225. He's every bit as fast. catches the football just as well as Tank does. I'm not disparaging Tank or anything like that. Tank is a great running back, but Brian Robinson, 6'1", 225. He's got the body, he's got the frame, and he's done a lot of really positive things this year out of the backfield. A third of his yardage is on plays that account for more than 15 yards. That's absurd. He's broken 51 tackles this year. That's a third of his rushing attempts, actually. 30% of his rushing attempts, he forces a missed tackle. In comparison to that, Tank's doing about 23% in that category.
I wonder why his yards per carry is so low then.
The offensive line. Negative plays, as you've been pointing out.
That's right, yeah. So there you go.
I mean, the two-thirds of the times that he's not breaking tackles, probably a decent amount of that may be for a loss or for only a handful. I'm telling you, this offensive line at Alabama is not good, and that's going to provide Auburn with an opportunity on Saturday if they decide to bring more pressure than just three players and if they decide to maybe commit to the run a little bit. But Tank versus Brian Robinson, comparing these two backfields, I like Alabama's from a production standpoint and a skill standpoint, maybe a little bit more than Auburn's at this point. I don't think it's a big difference. So I'd probably on my sheet here, if just breaking this down, if I can, if you'll allow me to, I'll put an equal sign here. Auburn's got more depth at running back. I think quality depth at running back. Jarquez can come in and do every bit of what Alabama's backups are doing right now. And I don't think there's a ton separating Tank and Brian Robinson. But if you made me choose which running back I wanted more, I might go Brian Robinson.
Would you take Roydell Williams and Trey Sanders over the production that Jarquez Hunter could give you in this game?
See, and Jarquez has had such a negative back end of the season.
I want to see him go back to playing well. I just don't know what his issue is.
He's not breaking a lot of tackles right now.
He does not have change of direction like Tank has. I'll say that.
He's a lot bigger than Tank.
He is a lot
less agile. Mm-hmm. Can't stop on a dime. Tank is a great running back. He really is. And I think the one thing hampering Tank at this point is the fact that he's 208 pounds. He's 6'2", 208, so you got good height for a running back there, but he's 208 pounds. It's not bad size, but also when you're comparing him to Brian Robinson, that extra 17 pounds makes a difference out of the backfield. It helps you break tackles a little bit easier, helps you have a little bit more durability to be able to take the hits. Jarquez has got the size, but I don't think he's quite gotten to the point of being able to break tackles due to agility and make cuts like Tank does. Tank is great at making cuts. Jarquez is probably better at running through people and staying on his feet after he is met with contact.
I would agree with you. Also, you just look at the numbers that Trey Sanders and Roydell Williams have put up. I mean, I don't think either of them have cracked 200 yards so far this season. So I like Jarquez Hunter statistically overall, but whenever you look at the way that he's been playing over the past 8-9 games, it's been continuously going down, I think, in his production. And so that's just been the disappointing part for me.
Let's go with an equal sign at running back. I you would agree with that. There's not too much separating these backfields. Auburn's averaging more yards per carry on the ground than Alabama is, with Brian Robinson at 4.9. But talent-wise, I like Brian Robinson a little bit more than Tank Bigsby and the other guys out of this backfield. So I think Alabama has the best running back, but from a production standpoint, Auburn's getting more out of their running backs.
I would agree. Depth in production, I think Auburn. But talent-wise, I think it's Alabama, and a lot of that has to do with their top back. I don't know if I do trust the depth that they have.
And one day, those guys will probably end up being very good running backs. But right now, I don't think they're quite there yet. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the offensive line and the wide receivers in this matchup between Auburn and Alabama. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dawn, ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. We want to hear from you. Score predictions. You're out there Black Friday shopping, driving around. Give us a call. I know you got to be bored out there, my man. Give us a call.
I also want to point out, aside from score predictions, if anybody has a score prediction with Alabama scoring 35 points or less, please call in. I want to hear your explanation as to why Alabama's going to score less than 35, because I don't believe they're going to. I would love to hear if anybody has a score prediction where they think this is somehow a defensive affair. I would love to hear your call. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
You're predicting doomsday tomorrow, man. Oh, you're predicting the asteroid.
Yeah, I think it's going to be ugly. I don't think Auburn has much of a shot in this game because of the fact that I don't believe in T.J. Finley as a passer, and Auburn's not going to hand the football off the Tank. And Mike Bobo has proven that. So,
let me ask you this question. I asked a couple of people this yesterday because, you know, Thanksgiving, you talk about the Iron Bowl in the state. T.J. Finley coming into this game, where is he in comparison in terms of his passing ability to Bo Nix when he was a freshman?
I think that the lack of downfield accuracy is very similar to what Bo Nix was dealing with as a freshman, except I think that Bo Nix was underthrowing a lot of different things, and TJ Finley looks like he's overshooting a lot of different passes that we saw in the South Carolina game. So I think that it's the same result, but at the end of the day, I think they're doing it in a different way. I think the accuracy is definitely not there. I don't like his mechanics. I don't like the fact that he has to wind up like that to throw a football.
But in terms of his ability, where's he at compared to Bo when we were going into the 2019 Iron Bowl? Because we were going into the 2019 Iron Bowl with a horrible offensive performance against Georgia the week before, or 2 weeks before, however long it had been. I can't remember if there was an FCS team splitting. Bo really hadn't done anything against any good teams that year, and it was in a vastly different system. Better receivers, but a worse system for the quarterback. So I'm curious, where do you think those two match up? Because that's a question that I've been getting people to think a lot about.
Well, I think that Nick's throwing for like 130, 140 yards or whatever he did in that game is not going to be very difficult. You can bring up the exact stat line.
Yeah, I'll bring it up.
But it's not going to be very difficult to achieve. So the numbers that Nick's put up in that game, the one touchdown that he had to Canella, I mean, I think that Finley can put up whatever stat line Nick's had in the Iron Bowl. But what is the issue outside of that, I think, is the lack of receiver help that Auburn has. And then on top of that, I don't know if Auburn's going to just magically get two pick sixes in this game. I don't know if that's going to rely on that. And also, I don't know if we have a kicker that can knock through multiple field goals in this game, and one of them is time expired at the end of the first half. So it's just Auburn had a little bit more. They weren't as injured as this squad is, so I think that's definitely a concern for this year with TJ Finley as the quarterback.
I don't think Auburn's going to win, but a lot of people are using the reason of TJ Finley as why Auburn's not going to win this game. And sure, that's a factor in it.
He won't be the main reason.
But Auburn losing this game is not on the quarterback position as much as it is at other spots, in my eyes. Because Auburn beat Alabama 2 years ago at home with a quarterback who was 15 for 30 for 173 yards and a touchdown and no picks. I think TJ Finley could give you better than that in this game. I could see TJ Finley putting up 240 yards, maybe two touchdowns, on this coaching staff's script and this coaching staff's passing offense, even with worse receivers. And that was Bo throwing to Seth Williams, Eli Stove, and Anthony Schwartz. Will Hastings was on that team. He had those guys, you know what I mean? And Bo went 15 for 30, you know? So I like this offense a lot more from a passing standpoint. I mean, Auburn is averaging over 250 pass yards per game, you know what I mean? And I think they can still get to 180, 200. And if TJ has a really good day, I mean, 240 is not great in college football, but I think they could get up to that point if he has a really, really good day. So I think Auburn, you know, if you take away the two pick sixes in that 2019 Iron Bowl, there goes 14 points. It would be 45-34. And then I think you could shave off about 10 points, and I could see Auburn hitting 24 in this one, 24 or 21 points in this one, just because of the way that the Alabama defense plays. And we'll get to that. But I just don't like it's part of the reason why Auburn won't win, because Alabama is so much better of a quarterback than Auburn. TJ Finley's young. That's part of the reason. But the reason why Auburn's not going to win this game isn't just a quarterback. It's because they can't defend the pass. They have a hard time blocking for their quarterback. The receivers are inexperienced. I mean, you can run the gamut. Auburn's not losing this game just because of the quarterback position. No. That's actually one very small issue in my mind compared to the litany of issues everywhere else on the football field that we've seen the last 3-4 weeks.
I would absolutely agree with that. Look, TJ Finley is probably not going to, I don't know if he's necessarily going to win Auburn this football game, and I think that he would be a small reason as to why Auburn could lose this game, because look, it's not his fault necessarily that Auburn's having to play with a backup quarterback right now. It's not his fault that he's in the situation that he's in. I would say that I hope the coaching staff is not a reason why we lose this game, and I hope it's not a situation where we're down like 13-10 at halftime and the goal would be to run tank in the second half and Mike Bobo goes, oh, 48 passes, what, like, and just like chucks it down the field 30 times in the second half. I hope that doesn't happen, and I hope we're not leaving Saturday saying, man, TJ Finley did put us in a good spot to win this game and the coaching staff botched it. I hope that's not a reason, but I could also see that being a much bigger reason than TJ Finley not having a great performance. And like you mentioned, the defensive side of things, what is Derek Mason going to do in this game? Honestly, have no idea what he's going to plan in this game, considering he has just shown time and time and time again he's not going to do what you think he's going to do. So, and even if he does try his best to send pressure, do whatever, I think the secondary is going to get exposed. I think this is going to be a game where we look back and say, you know what, even though we have an NFL corner on our roster, Roger McCreary, I don't think that he could have really done much in this game. That was something that you and I were talking about yesterday, is if Auburn elects to play zone, then they're going to have a lot of different issues. If they elect to play man, Roger McCreary has to match up against one guy. Is that going to be Jameson Williams or is that going to be John Metchie? Because Metchie is targeted more, but Williams is the more explosive guy. It's going to leave one of those two open because I don't believe Smoke Monday, Jalen Simpson, Nehemiah Pritchett, Donovan Kaufman, by Darius Knighton. You name the player out there, I don't think they're going to be able to cover the other Alabama receivers. So there's a lot of different issues in this game outside of just the quarterback position that could lose Auburn this game. Just to recap, inconsistent play calling and the secondary playing bad, and then the offensive line not performing well for TJ Finley, and then the lack of receiver play, I think are all four different things that you could look at saying, okay, these were bigger issues than TJ Finley not having a good game. And Auburn hasn't lost yet. I'm not saying that it's definitively going to happen, but I'm just projecting a loss. And so we're projecting the things that could be the reason why it happens.
I think it'll be really good to talk about later why Auburn can win this game.
Yeah.
Try and break down our small bullet point list of why Auburn can win this game, break down what Auburn could do to win this game. I think that'll be a good point of view to look at, because I'm still not willing, and a lot of people are, I'm still not willing to say Auburn's just going to get absolutely mangled in this game, which is a 28.5 point line with Alabama on the road. And if you changed Auburn's jersey out and this was Alabama playing the same players, like if all of Auburn's players were still football players on the same team, like this was the exact same team, exact same players, but they were wearing a LSU jersey or they were wearing a Tennessee jersey, Alabama beats them by 50. But this is not Alabama LSU. This is not Alabama Tennessee. This is the Iron Bowl. And coaching staffs and players find a way to dig deep and to be able to find stuff that maybe they weren't finding earlier on in the year.
Find a way to dig deep and keep it a one-score game at halftime.
100%. I mean, look, even look at Deep South's oldest rivalry this year. Of course, look at what the score turned out to be at the end, but Auburn was hanging around at halftime. They're hanging around into the third quarter.
Except Alabama's not as good in the trenches as Georgia. Now, they may have more explosive skill position players, but they're not better in the trenches. And I think that
they're
was
a lot worse in the trenches than Georgia.
I think that was a huge reason why Georgia won that game.
Granted, Auburn was a lot healthier of a football team back then.
That is true.
But they were also a lot worse at wide receiver.
That is true.
They were a lot worse in several areas on the team back then that I think you've seen Auburn improve upon since they went on that stretch when they beat Arkansas and Ole Miss. Now, granted, have they taken a step back over the last 3 or 4 weeks? I don't think that the players have gotten worse over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think the quarterback position has because you lost your starter, but I don't think that they've gotten worse. I just think they're being mismanaged. We'll be back on the other side of this break with more of On the Line. Still breaking down tomorrow's Iron Bowl action as well as Auburn basketball. They play the Syracuse Orange today in the battle for Atlantis. All that and more coming up on the Line.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. 334-321-1390 is the number to call. Talking about the Iron Bowl as well as other rivalry matchups in college football, this is one of the best weekends of the entire college football season. I say one of the best because as equally as awesome as all of the great games is this Saturday, it's equally as saddening that this is our last week of regular season football, with the exception of Army-Navy.
It feels like just yesterday Auburn was 6-2. It also feels like just yesterday that the season was kicking off. So, yeah, I agree. It's really exciting, the fact that we're getting to finally play in the Iron Bowl. It feels like I've been waiting forever for this, even though it's only been about a year. But I will say, this college football season has really flown by, and man, what a great season it's been.
Something that I was just talking to you about during the break: number 2, Ohio State at number 5, Michigan, the game, 11 a.m. on Fox. This one, to me, feels a lot like the 2013 Iron Bowl. a spot in the Big Ten championship on the line, a spot for the college football playoff on the line, which wasn't the case in 2013, but of course you had to win that game, you had to win the SEC championship to at least have a shot at going and playing in the national championship. So you can see that it has direct implications to having a chance at playing for a national championship. The game is in Ann Arbor at the house of the team that is not favored to win the game, similar to the 2013 Iron Bowl. Michigan fans have clearly been the underdog in this rivalry for quite some time, all the way back into the mid-2000s. They have not had the best luck in the world. They're trying to get over the hump. For some reason, this game feels like that to me.
I can see the similarities in it, but I don't know if Michigan necessarily is going to be able to keep up with Ohio State's passing game. And that's the big thing that concerns me is like, man, that is a really talented unit that Ohio State has got. And I know Michigan has historically, or at least over the past few seasons, I'll say that, they've been good defensively. I just don't know if it's enough to keep up with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave.
They hold opposing teams to 178.4 pass yards per game. So the pass defense is on point. They hold opponents to a total of 306.8 yards per game, 16.3 total points allowed per game. Ohio State, of course, though, on offense, they are averaging 362 passing yards per game. C.J. Stroud has moved in to the front-runner role for the Heisman with his recent play, especially after what he did to Michigan State. 47.2 points per game for the Buckeyes. They average almost 200 rushing yards. This is one of the best, if not the best, offense in all of college football from a sheer numbers standpoint. Michigan is going to have their hands full, but Michigan's offense is no slouch either. I wouldn't say it's much more balanced in the fact that the numbers are a lot closer between passing and rushing. They average 230 passing yards to 220 rushing yards just about. But Ohio State, it's hard to balance out 300 rushing yards with 362 passing yards. That's very difficult to do. I mean, their passing offense is just that good.
Yep.
We know which one of these teams is better offensively. I think you can say, though, without a doubt, that Michigan's a much better defensive team than Ohio State. Ohio State's given up almost 20 points per game. That's 3 points more than Michigan at this point. Giving up 350 yards allowed, 252 pass yards. So it's possible for Michigan to be able to throw on these guys. Ohio State's just been really good at stopping the run, but I think you can look at it on paper. Last week against Michigan State, they handled the run pretty well, but also think that you can say that they could have afforded to stack the box against Michigan State, who has not been a very good passing team this year. Aside from that, you go back to the beginning of the season when Ohio State played Oregon and Minnesota. They got ran all over. So I'm kind of skeptical of the 103.5 rush yards allowed per game. I just don't think they have faced the beef on the ground in the Big Ten because they're playing teams with the likes of Nebraska, Indiana, Penn State, who we know couldn't run the ball against air. Like, they haven't played that many good rushing teams. Maryland, another one of those teams in that category, right? Like, I don't trust this Ohio State defense nearly as much as I trust Michigan. I think that could be the equalizer there. I think Michigan could, if they can control the clock, no silly turnovers, complete passes on key downs, which Cade McNamara has shown the ability to do this year, 2,142 passing yards, 14 TDs, 2 interceptions. He's 170 for 265, so a very good completion percentage there. I mean, McNamara has shown the ability in games this season. That Michigan State game was a good look. It was not his fault that they lost that game. It was the defense and Jim Harbaugh. If he can control the clock, Jim Harbaugh get out of his way, and then be able to complete passes in key situations, I think Michigan can keep this one close going into the fourth, and that's where it needs to be at for them to have a chance to win.
I will say this about the Ohio State defense. I mean, they just held Kenneth Walker to 25 rushing yards on 6 carries, or 20. I think it was more than that. It was just 6 carries. So it was not necessarily a shutdown from Ohio State's defense, but I will say, as opposed to what you were just saying, some of the other Big Ten running backs and these other Big Ten stables, I don't think that Ohio State has matched up against such a deep running back room as Michigan's. Is that going to be the thing that wins in this game? I don't know, But I think this is an efficient enough of an offense to where if they do get a couple of stops down the road against Ohio State's offense, they can kind of control the clock. Like you said, Cade McNamara has shown the ability to make key throws in third down situations or in pressure situations. I think this is a game where if Michigan not necessarily plays perfectly, but plays efficiently, they can kind of play keep away and slow this game down and eventually get it heading into the fourth quarter. They can get it to where it's very manageable.
Ohio State's running backs averaged 4.8, 4.9, or Michigan State's running backs, averaged 4.9 yards per carry last week against Ohio State. You take Harold Joyner's loss. Hey, it's Harold Joyner.
Yeah, it is Harold Joyner.
You take Harold Joyner's loss out, which was 2 yards on one carry, and you take Peyton Thorne's sacks out the way. That's the number that you get. It was 4.8 yards per carry for Michigan State last week, which I wish college football – there are two things I want changed. Check that. Three things I want changed in college football. No more ejections and targeting. That's at the top of my list. Second on my list is quit counting sack yardage as a part of the rushing category for a team. And then the third thing I want changed is no more polls until about week 8 in college football. If I could get all three of those things, I would be a very happy man.
All right, that's on your Christmas list?
I'm good with a 12-team playoff, too. We'll just go ahead and slap that on there, too.
All right.
Right there.
I'm good with also just Alabama ceasing to exist for a couple of seasons just to see what Auburn's able to do in the West. I would also take that as well. But yeah, I agree with all those things.
I don't know, man. Tom needs Jerry. Jerry needs Tom.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
That is such a fun rivalry. I like competing. I like it. I don't want to see Alabama cease to exist.
For two seasons. Just two seasons. I'd take it for 2 years.
You're rooting for probation?
Yes, I would root for probation for 2 years so that Auburn could have a shot to actually win the division. I would take that.
Auburn can win the division with Alabama being present. They've done it in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
and that cheapens it for me a little bit. I want to be. If you want to be the best, beat the best.
I don't know if they can over these next two seasons.
Are you so certain that right now Auburn can beat A&M with consistency?
I think they would. I think they would have as good of a shot as they did this season. And I mean, heck, they get them at home next year.
So. Yeah, which has typically been for the other team in this series.
Yeah, but you look at what's going to be happening next season. I mean, Auburn's going to be bringing a lot back. It is going to be at Jordan Hare if Brian Harsin either keeps his coordinators and gets them to actually think straight, or he gets better coordinators that can think straight. Auburn should have a legitimate chance in that matchup.
I would hope so. I would hope so. We were just talking about Ohio State, Michigan, some other games on the schedule that carry some importance during rivalry week. Of course, some games going on today. Nebraska, a 3-7 football team, or 3-8 football team, was favored over 16th-ranked Iowa. They're cleaning up right now. It's 21-6 with 5:54 left in the third on Big Ten Network. I'll tell you, 15 points. And granted, they did make a comeback against Penn State from down double digits earlier this year. But for Iowa, 15-point deficit, that's a lot for that offense.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers right now. I mean, they've put up 100-yard rushing. Their passing numbers have been just kind of eh. I don't think that they'll be able to climb back into this one, to be honest with you.
Not any other good games going on right now. Of course, Missouri and number 25 Arkansas, if they haven't kicked off, they will be kicking off shortly on CBS. Later on today, number 4 Cincinnati at ECU at 2:50 on ABC. They're looking to end their season undefeated, or at least their regular season undefeated. They still have the conference championship game next week. Colorado at number 19, Utah. That's at 3 p.m. on Fox. Nothing going there. TCU at Iowa State, 3:30 p.m. FS1. I think TCU's a 5-win team right now. Yep, they are 5-6 against a 6-5 Iowa State team. So TCU with everything to play for, but Iowa State favored by 16. It's like they didn't learn from the fact that TCU beat Baylor a couple weeks ago. North Carolina at number 20, NC State at 6 on ESPN. That ought to be a pretty good ball game just for the fact that Sam Howell's a tough quarterback and that team can score some points. That's an 8-3 NC State team, ranked number 20 in the country, hosting a 6-5 North Carolina team. Could be a team that Auburn plays in bowl season when it comes around, and that would be a team that I would not want to face just because of how they would throw all the way over Auburn.
Yeah, do not want to touch North Carolina with a 10-foot pole right now. Would not want to go up against that.
Apple Cup tonight at 7 p.m. on FS1, Washington State at Washington. Lance, I don't know if you know this. Washington State can still go to the Pac-12 championship game.
At 6-5?
5-3 in conference play. Oregon is at the top at 9-2 overall and 6-2 in conference play, but they play Oregon State tomorrow. they've all beaten each other. Oregon beat Washington State. Washington State beat Oregon State. And then Oregon State would have beaten Oregon in this scenario. I don't know who goes out of that tiebreaker. I don't know how the Pac-12 breaks that down. I'm just saying we could be looking at a three-way tie with Washington State having a shot at making it to the conference title game.
Wow. Okay, so
that's disgusting.
Hang on.
But
just to recap, Washington State beat Oregon State and lost to Oregon. Oregon State could potentially beat Oregon and lose to Washington State, and then Oregon could have potentially have beaten Washington State and then lost to who goes?
I don't know. It's a three-way tie. Earlier today, some of the action in college football. Number 21, San Diego State, just wrapped up their game with Boise State. San Diego State beat Boise 27-16. Kansas State lost inexplicably to Texas 22-17. Longhorns finished their year on a high note, 5-7 on the year in Steve Sarkisian's first season in charge. Man, if they had just found a way to beat one more team that they should not have lost to earlier this year. That losing streak snapped at the end there. I think it was like a 4 or 5 game losing streak there for Texas at the end that disqualified them from bowl eligibility. So that was a look at what's been happening around college football today. And of course, you get into tomorrow and there's a lot more action. We'll talk about that later on in the show. A nod to our general manager here, Steve Witten. His grad program, Ohio, fell to Bowling Green 21-10, defining Scott Leffler's
rip.
Oh, that's tough. That is tough. 4-8 Bowling Green. Ohio finished 3-9 this year. Ohio used to be a really good MAC program. What happened?
Yeah, and a lot of it had to do with their quarterback, Nathan Rourke. His little brother, Curtis Rourke, has been playing quarterback this season, but he's not been anywhere near as good of a runner or as good of a passer as Nathan Rourke was. So the offense has just taken a major step back so far this season, and the defense is giving up 31 points a game. So.
When we come back, we're going to make some Saturday selections here on the Friday edition of On the Line, the Iron Bowl Friday edition of On the Line. We'll be back in just a moment on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama.
Wrapping up hour number one of On the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you want to call into the show, give your thoughts on what could potentially happen in the Iron Bowl tomorrow. Again, if you think Auburn is somehow going to hold Alabama to under 35 points, please call in. I want to hear your thoughts as to why. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. We're going to go ahead and get into some Saturday selections here. We've got some interesting Friday games to pick as we wrap up hour number one of the show.
Saturday selections.
All right, Noah, take me through it.
All right, here we go. According to my ESPN app, Missouri-Arkansas hasn't kicked off yet, and I haven't looked at anything going on. I don't know if anybody's scored. So real quick, before that thing fires up, who's going to win, Missouri or Arkansas?
It's going to be Arkansas, I think. I am impressed with the way that Missouri was able to fight against Florida, but that is a dead program, only beating them by 2 in overtime after seeing what Arkansas did last week, which was throw everything in the kitchen sink at Alabama and only lost by 7. Yeah, I'm impressed with the way the Razorbacks have played so far this season. Give me Arkansas at home.
They're playing really hard right now. They almost got over the hump against Alabama last week. I don't see how Missouri's going to be able to stop the run against these guys. This is one of the most poor run defenses in all of college football. Missouri traded places with Ole Miss, but good for them to still make it to bowl eligibility at 6-5 overall. This program continues to grow under Eli Drinkwitz. The question is, can they sustain it? Because this year didn't look as good as it did last year. But if they can sustain at 6-7 wins every year, I don't think they will be unhappy with Mr. Drinkwitz.
No, I don't think so either. And look, I think you're going to get a schedule in the future that does not give you a 50-50 matchup against Boston College on the road. I think you're going to eventually find a schedule where that is probably going to be a cupcake game. And look, you could potentially get yourself to 7-8 wins down the road. I believe this is only still Connor Bazelak's second season with the Missouri Tigers. He's going to develop. There's a lot out in front of this Missouri team. It's just the question is, can they recruit to the point where they can get those 6, 7, 8 wins consistently?
Well, next year's Missouri football schedule, they have to play Kansas State on the road.
Could potentially be a Skylar Thompson-less team. So, I mean, that is going to be a competitive matchup, but we'll just have to see. Skylar Thompson, by the way, was injured in the previous game I believe Kansas State's played. So Will Howard, the backup quarterback, had to play against Texas earlier. That might have been one of the reasons why they lost.
You want to hear doomsday for Missouri next year?
Hit me.
Four of their first six games are on the road. Four of their first six games are against Kansas State, Auburn, Georgia, and Florida.
Yep, they won't be going to a bowl. That's it. All right.
I mean, that's 2-4 at best, 3-3 through their first six. Now, the back end's favorable. You got Vanderbilt at home. There's a win. That'll put them at 4-3. They'll have a chance to beat South Carolina on the road. That'll put you at 5-3. You got Kentucky. That's probably a loss. 5-4. They're at Tennessee. I think that'll probably be a loss. 5-5. They beat New Mexico State. That's 6. I mean, they're going to have some tough games. Like, beating South Carolina is going to be the decider for them. Just like it was this year. They had to beat them to get there. And, well, they also had to beat Florida, too, thinking about that as well. But that first six games, man. Dude.
It's
what
tough.
Are you doing? The SEC hates them. Absolutely hates them. All right, moving on. Games this evening. North Carolina at number 20, NC State, 6 p.m. ESPN.
I really want to take North Carolina in this game simply because of the way the offense has been playing so far this season. Sam Howell, by the way, way more mobile than I think a lot of people give him credit
for.
Dude,
he's a running back with an arm.
When I watch him play, it's incredible. I had no idea that he had wheels like that. I'm going to take NC State to win simply because it is at home in this rivalry matchup. And you look at NC State's quarterback, Devin Leary, 31 touchdowns, 5 picks this season. Not a lot of guys are talking about Devin Leary. He has played really well for the Wolfpack this season. Give me NC State at home.
What's the weather like in this game? Because if it's going to be like Pittsburgh, where it was a torrential downpour, then I'm going to have to go to with NC State. But something about NC State and the way that they've played teams that have good passing offenses, they gave up 45 to Wake. They gave up 30 to Miami. They gave up 24 to Mississippi State. Something about this game bothers me a little bit because North Carolina can still sling it. These guys are still averaging 270 passing yards per game, 211 yards on the ground. They can still score. Problem is their defense gives up a ton too. And so the difference maker here between these two teams, the big difference is that NC State's defense is a lot better. So I'll hang with NC State at home, but I'm with you. I really want to pick North Carolina in this game. I don't think it's out of the question.
Weather, by the way, 53 degrees, it's not going to rain. So it's going to be probably pretty dry, pretty cold.
Ooh, that could bring the upset.
That could be fun. Finally get to see Sam Howell actually throw the football as opposed to the overtime game against Pittsburgh. Do you see that where it just started pouring right as North Carolina took the field on offense?
Yes.
And it just kind of hosed them?
I had just tweeted, it's going to be awesome to see this game give us 12 overtimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened next was 4-0. Apple Cup, last game to pick here before we go to break. 7 p.m. FS1, Washington State favored by a point on the road at Washington. But this game's a push to me. 6-5 Cougars against 4-7 Huskies.
Yeah, Washington's coachless right now. Give me Washington State. That's probably the biggest reason for me.
And Washington State's actually beaten some good teams, hung around with they've beaten some decent teams, hung around with some good teams. Lost to BYU by 2, lost to Oregon by 14, but they've beaten Arizona State by 13 recently, whereas Washington just lost to Colorado by 3.
Oof, and we know where Colorado's at this season. How did Texas A&M go from that Colorado game to where they are now? It's wild to me.
Well, they got their lines and their running game a lot better and a lot better of a place. They really did.
Yeah.
All right, that'll be it for Saturday selections for the time being. We will come back with more Saturday selections for hour number 2. We'll be taking a look at actually the Saturday games on a rivalry Saturday slate of games. A lot of good stuff to look at there. Coming up at the start of hour number 2, we're going to talk some Auburn basketball, get you ready for Auburn's game against Syracuse. I know Lance has got some thoughts about this basketball team after what was almost blowing your top off in the UConn game.
And I'm still mad about it.
Well, I'm mad that UConn played bad today. Did they lose?
I don't know. I don't know if they lost, but they shot 2 of 13 from 3 against Michigan State yesterday, and it about lit me up.
They're up by 5 right now in overtime with VCU on ESPN2. 1:43 left in that Battle for Atlantis game, which means that Auburn's game is going to probably start later than 3:30. Mm. So we'll be back with hour number 2 of On the Line on the other side of this break.
You are on the line. live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. An hour away to our weekend. Pretty much an hour away till our Iron Bowl. In my eyes, I just got to get off the air. And then it's the weekend, and then we are riding into that game tomorrow. I'm pumped.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Iron Bowl as well. And then I'm also really excited about Auburn taking on Syracuse here in about half an hour. Like you said earlier, it might be a little bit later than that because UConn and VCU are currently in overtime.
And it's going to end in overtime more than likely. Granted, Auburn overcame a deficit about this much to send it to double OT, but UConn is winning 65-57 over VCU with a minute left in OT on ESPN2. I'll tell you this, because we didn't get to talk about the UConn game a whole lot in person, and we talked about it during the game on Wednesday, but my post-game thoughts about that, we'll get to that on the other side of this phone call here. We're going to head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390. Almost forgot about Terry. Terry, how's it going, my man?
Fantastic, guys. How y'all doing?
We're doing real well. Was your Thanksgiving good?
We're pretty good. Pretty good. Ate too much, as always. Let me ask you guys, is Jerry McNamara still at Syracuse? Or is he finally done?
Are you talking about Jim Boeheim?
No, Jay had a player named McNamara that seemed like he was there for about 10 years.
I don't think he is.
Thank God.
He's an assistant coach, though.
Still, Jim Bay has been there a long time, too.
Yeah, Jerry McNamara is an assistant coach there right now, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed like he played there forever.
He did, and he was a grad manager there for a little bit, and then he's been an assistant since 2011. He's 38 years old.
Golly. Well, guys, I got three names I want to throw at you, Noah Lance. If y'all would just tell me in one word where you think they're going to be next year, coaching next year, okay?
All right.
Go for it.
Hugh Freeze.
I think he's going to be at Liberty. There was reports that he was getting ready to sign another deal. I think he's going to be at Liberty. Most programs, I don't think, are going to cross that bridge.
Yeah, I think he's going to be at Liberty, but I would like to see him go to another school. Now, I don't know who that would necessarily be. I don't know if the SEC would let him back in. If they would, I think it'd be fun to see him at Florida. I'm not going to lie. Now,
yeah,
would that
he
be
just
a
signed a contract extension 2 days ago.
Oof.
Means nothing.
That's
means
fair.
Nothing.
That is true.
Lane Kiffin.
Miami.
Brian Carson.
I think he'll be at Auburn.
I think he'll be at Auburn, but looking down the line, I mean, if things don't start to pick up, I can definitely see Auburn making a change.
Okay. Yeah, okay, that was it. Just the McNamara thing was meant to be a joke, guys, because he seemed like he played there forever. It just seemed that way.
It went over my head because, honestly, Terry, I would have I would not know who that is. I'm sorry. I don't know the depths of Syracuse basketball history.
Well, I can't sit here and say I followed Syracuse closely, but he did seem like he played there forever.
Yeah.
And as long as Boeheim's there, they're going to be good. So,
yeah.
You know,
they're definitely down this year, it seems, but I'm still incredibly uncomfortable about today's game that's coming up in about 30, 40 minutes. You never know when they're going to get hot on offense and they shoot the three ball so well. That could be absolutely killer for Auburn if they don't guard the perimeter well.
Yeah, no, it's a shame Auburn's got to look forward to basketball season. Listen, the only way Auburn's got a shot against Alabama tomorrow is if there's some kind of, you know, bus breakdown or Alabama doesn't show up or something.
Or, you know, we change our uniforms to Iona. We might have a chance if we do that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Appreciate the call, Terry.
Rick Pitino doesn't coach football, does he?
What was that?
Rick Pitino doesn't coach football, does he?
Hey, no, he doesn't, but I know a lot of Auburn fans might want to see Bruce Pearl coach football. He might do an okay job at that.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody's kind of misunderstanding things that are going on. I don't think Brian Harsin. I've heard the question a lot lately. Is he happy at Auburn? And I don't know. Brian Harsin's one of those guys that doesn't show any emotion either way. So I really don't know how to answer that. You know, it's tough to come from, you know, what do you Idaho, right?
Yeah, he was in Boise, Idaho.
So Idaho to Auburn. I mean, that's clear across country.
That's right. It's very culturally different, but likewise, I mean, he could be happy. You're right. I mean, he doesn't tip his hands on his emotions. He's a very just straightforward, you know, close to the vest type of person. I think he's happy being here. I think people are making a lot out of nothing with this.
I don't know. It's tough to tell. Quite honestly, it really is tough to tell because it's such a big jump. And I reiterate, he's not the kind of guy to show emotion.
Yeah.
So you don't know either way, good or bad. I mean, you just don't know.
That's a good point.
And the SEC, I'm a big believer that people can talk about the Southeastern Conference all they want, but until you get here and experience it, it's a whole different ball game. Because recruiting is different. It's a bloodletting. Recruiting is a bloodletting. You know, and what Nick Saban has built now out in Tuscaloosa and what Kirby Smart's in the process of building at Georgia, those are things that you can't really see from afar, especially Idaho.
I agree with that. I still think that he is a capable coach, able to get things going in the right direction, because I think at one point this year we did see that. An injury to his quarterback and some boneheaded things happening amongst his coordinators. Now, if somebody wants to see changes at coordinator, I think that there's enough evidence to suggest that I'm okay with people saying that. But at head coach, I like what we've got.
I'd like to see more of a coordinator change at defense. I just don't believe Derek Mason will ever get it done. I believe he's a West Coast guy, too, and I don't believe he'll ever get it done. And I believe, quite honestly, he brought Vanderbilt to Auburn. You know, he doesn't seem to make adjustments at all.
No, what you get on that defense.
And that's bothersome. It really is. And as far as offense goes, Bobo, I think it's still a learning process for him to a degree. Now, you say that, and the guy's, how old is Bobo? 40?
He's a lot older than that.
Probably a little bit older than that.
Yeah, he's got a kid that's about to graduate high school.
He's old enough to know that he should run Tank more.
He's 47, yeah, so you weren't too far off.
He's old enough to know he should give the ball to Tank Bigsby, or a 6'7", 250-pound quarterback on fourth down and a half yard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Instead of throwing a 30-yard pass. not even a pass to the tight end of 6 yards.
Into double coverage.
Into double coverage. Yeah, exactly. So that makes very little sense, guys. But listen, guys, always good to talk to me. Y'all have a good day. Have a good day.
You too. Have a good Iron Bowl tomorrow, Terry. That was Terry on the line with us. Yeah, Terry's thoughts are going to represent a sector of this fan base that want to see changes, and I respect those thoughts. I think that there's enough evidence out there to suggest that if somebody wants changes at the coordinator positions, if they want to see those two open up and Auburn go in a different direction, I would think that there is enough there with what we've seen this season if they wanted to go in that direction. I'll tell you this, though. I'm a lot happier with Bobo's performance this year than I am with Derek Mason's performance.
I would agree with that.
I can look at what Bobo's done on offense, and I can say in areas on the offense, now granted the last 4 weeks have been bad. They've scored just 12 points in the second half across the last 4 weeks. The offense has been undeniably a major issue the last 4 weeks. The defense has been too. Look at the Mississippi State game. I don't think that they were great against South Carolina either. But I can look at the entire picture of what the offense has done this year, and I can say Mike Bobo took it a step forward from where Gus had it. Gus just had the running game pretty good, in a pretty good spot. But when Gus played teams that could just stack the box and stop the run, Auburn would score 6 points on Georgia. And plain and simple, that would be what would happen. Now, granted, Auburn didn't do much better on the scoreboard against great defenses this year. They didn't. But you can look at the entire picture of the Auburn offense and you can say, hey, he made our quarterback better. He made our passing game better. You can say that. And I don't think that the running game has deteriorated necessarily because of him. He's just, and these coaches on offense, I think, are just dealing the hand that they have. They're playing with the hand that they have, which those five offensive linemen were Gus's offensive linemen. Plain and simple, they were. And then what's behind them are Gus's offensive linemen. They have not gotten to change it, to revamp that group. They haven't gotten to refurbish it. Like, that is an issue right now. And I think that's hurting the rushing attack a bit, too. I think this offense has done about as well as it could. I mean, I think that they could have done some things the last few weeks. I'm not going to blame this coaching staff too much for the South Carolina game, because I think if Bo's healthy, Auburn puts up a lot of points in that game. They could have put up more if they had given Tank the ball more, sure. I don't know if they were going to put up 24 to 30 points in that game if, handed the ball off to Tank 10 more times. They might have scored one more touchdown, but 24 is still not a great offensive performance. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, last week was hurt by quarterback play. And then 2 weeks ago against Mississippi State, Auburn scored 28 in the first half. I mean, they put up points. They scored 34 points. The issue in that game was that they didn't play defense. You know? And then A&M was bad, 100%. A&M was bad. But I think Mike Bobo is being lumped in right now with issues on the team and the losses on the team. And granted, there have been some boneheaded calls. I hate the reverses. I hate the trick plays, man. I hate it. I think those come at really, really bad times, inopportune moments. I really agree with people on that. And then the fourth down call, I hate. The fades, I hate. I get that. I get all of that. But do not forget what this offense looked like under Malzahn and all of the things you hated about that. Because he threw fade routes just as much as the next guy, and he ran the ball 17 times in a row on first down. And that's hyperbole, but you get what I'm trying to say. Like, it was just as bad in the other regime. Yeah. So there are many ways I think that Bobo has improved this offense, and that should be respected, which is why I would like to see him here next year.
Yeah, I will also say the lack of talent in the receiver room, I think, has been evident so far this season. And had Auburn gotten Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams back this season, this offense would be, I think a lot of people would be very pleased with
it. They would have beat Penn State.
They would have beaten Penn State, because what did Auburn try and do in that game so many different times? They tried to work the ball outside, and they tried to get jump balls going. You work the ball outside to Seth Williams, you try and get Anthony Schwartz involved downfield. Auburn could have – those touchdowns that were left on the field could have actually turned into points had Williams and Schwartz been here.
And I think they would have had a much better shot against A&M, because there were some major receiver issues against Texas A&M as well. Those guys would have helped out a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look at several games this year where if there was just one or two guys back from last year's team, this year looks a lot different. Those guys could have came back. Now, Anthony Schwartz, go get your bag, man. You were a third-round pick, one of Auburn's highest receiver draft picks, and – the last 20 years. So go and get your bag, man, and go and play for the Cleveland Browns, because he does play. He plays a lot. He returns kicks for the Browns, which I don't like, but he's fine. And then Seth Williams, I don't even know what the guy's doing right now. He's been a non-factor for the Denver Broncos.
It's because they have so much depth at that spot. It's just like, how are you going to get playing time there, you know?
He's at least on the roster, which is an accomplishment, because receivers get cut like nobody's business.
Right.
Okay, you take so many in the preseason for the practice squad, and then not just for the practice squad, the preseason roster. You take so many receivers and they play, you know, like 20 different guys, and they all get cut. At least Seth Williams made it, and he was a late pick.
Yeah, if I'm getting paid $250,000 to sit on the bench, you know, from like my entire NFL
probably
career,
getting paid more than $250,000.
I was just setting it like the bar low.
Yeah.
Like, realistically, he's got probably getting paid more than that. I would be so happy with that. Like, the most valuable position in football is a backup quarterback, because they get paid, dude, and they don't have to do anything. So, I mean, sitting on the bench, not half bad. I mean, you're not getting to play, you're not getting to produce, but you're still getting that bag.
Now, on the flip side, we look at the defense and Derek Mason's performance this year. I think the defense has regressed in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
What we believe to be Auburn's best unit and a dark horse to be one of the best units in all of college football, the defensive backfield, they have been Auburn's constant Achilles heel.
Now, is that because of the scheme?
I think so.
Do you think if the scheme was adjusted, they would be better?
Yes. If they were playing more man-to-man and blitzed more, this defense would be a lot better.
I'm not saying that they're great, but I do think a lot of it does have to do with the way that Mason's been playing them. And after the majority of these guys playing in a man-to-man system for so long.
Roger McCreary is a top-three cornerback in college football. And when you have a top-three cornerback in college football, and that's not me just saying that. He's a top-three draft-eligible cornerback in college football.
Mm-hmm.
Todd McShay, Mel Kiper have him as a first-round draft pick. Late first round, early second. You are a top-tier cornerback in college football when you fall into that category. And the fact that Auburn's passing defense has been that bad with someone who can be that locked down on the outside, that's a problem. And yeah. I don't think Jalen Simpson and Nehemiah Pritchett are bad. I think Nehemiah Pritchett has shown struggles in the zone scheme, but I think he's been fine when he's been asked to man up, and the same as Jalen Simpson. The touchdown throw against South Carolina last week, the last one that put them up, Jalen Simpson was in coverage. It was in zone coverage.
Right.
It wasn't man-to-man. And I just don't think that they are as adept at doing that. Now, with that being said, could they get good at it? I don't hate the scheme. I just hate it for Auburn players right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cover threes ran everywhere. This type of defense is all across football. It's in the NFL. It's in college. It's all over the place. I would like to see Auburn bring more pressure. I think Auburn would bring more pressure if they believe they could get more pressure by bringing more guys. They're not. The defensive line is not good. So I also think Derek Mason's playing the hand that he's been dealt. I don't think it's an incredible group of personnel out there. I think the DBs are good players, and I know the linebackers are great. I don't think very much of this defensive line. I like Colby Wooden a lot.
I'll take Wooden and Leota, but those are the only two guys that I like, and, that I can think of.
And Derek Hall's had his moments, but I don't think that he has been – he's not a wrecker.
No.
Will Anderson isn't even good technically with his hands. Like, and I'm not the first person to say that. Like, Roman Harper on SEC Network has said that. I feel like I've heard Greg McElroy say that as well. Like, Will Anderson gets to the football on brute force and want to because of his motor and because of how gifted he is as an athlete. That's a wrecker. He's got 13 and a half sacks, and he's not even that great technically with his hands. He just runs over you. He's like a bull. Like, Auburn doesn't have that. And Eku Leota's been fine. But he's a 5.5, 6-sack guy this season. That's a sack every other game right now. That's not good enough. I need a guy who's going to live in the backfield. And Auburn at times, under Kevin Steele, had a guy that could change the game every single time he stepped out on the field. Derek Brown was that for four seasons. Marlon Davidson helped him in doing that. Carl Lawson was that way. Montrevious Adams wasn't too bad at it. Jeff Holland coming off the edge was a guy who could be like that. Auburn had guys coming off the edge for a while there that now I believe are underappreciated. We got too used to seeing it, and Auburn doesn't have it right now over these last 2 years. Wooden, I think, is a disruptor. I think he's excellent at stopping the run. I think he's came along as a pass rusher. I still don't think that's his best quality. I think he's best at – I think he fits this scheme really well. The 3-4 scheme plan is an interior defensive end. I think he fits this scheme very well because we've seen time and time again him be a disruptor in stopping the run because of his ability to get penetration on those plays. As a pass rusher, I don't think he's quite – quick enough to get to the quarterback. I don't think any of these guys are quite quick enough to get to the quarterback. And Auburn needs someone off the edge that is better at doing that, and they don't have that right now. So that's really hurting this defense a lot. So I do think, on the one hand, I hate the scheme, and I think they should adjust it for the personnel that they have and recruit to get to that point.
Yep.
They're not doing that, so that's a coaching fault, but I also think there isn't the best personnel in the front seven, at least on the defensive line. I think that's hurting them a lot still.
That's exactly what I was going to say earlier, is Derek Mason, through 11 games now, has yet to really adjust to the personnel, because we've seen the personnel on this team play well in a man-to-man scheme in the past. He's not adjusted to that. He's tried to brute force it and say, you're going to try and learn my scheme, and we're going to go through the growing pains. And the growing pains have resulted in 3-4 straight losses for Auburn, right? So something's not working. Adjustments should be made in this Iron Bowl. You talk about Auburn being desperate enough to win this game. We talk about Auburn throwing the book at Alabama, putting out their best product of the entire season. At least they're going to try and attempt to try and make some adjustments in this game. You know Alabama's offensive line's not very good, even if you haven't been able to get pressure on some other teams. Look, you were able to get pressure on teams like LSU and Arkansas. Stinkin put some guys at the line of scrimmage and tell them to line up and go get the quarterback. And so I think, like, exactly what you just said, which is they need to adjust now and recruit later to play this scheme better down the line. But this year's team right now is going to need to operate under a system that they feel comfortable in, because most of these guys are not coming back. It's not like we're trying to coach this team, this defense now, and coach them into the offseason and coach them into next year's team. Because most of these guys aren't staying. They're either graduating or they're going to transfer.
But there are younger guys behind them that they're trying to do that with.
Sure, but still, my point being, it would be more beneficial this season, instead of trying to do what Mason's done now, which is brute force it, it would be more beneficial to try and slowly adjust into your scheme. It's something that actually we were talking about this offseason about both sides of the football, which is, how is Auburn not going to just immediately cold shower throw these guys into the fire and say, okay, you're going to run this new scheme now. We're not even going to try and do what you did in years past and make it comfortable. How are they going to slowly adjust things? And I think they've done that on the offensive side of the ball, but the defense has just been like, no more, man. Nope, none of it.
So I'm going to break down some stats for you, and then we're going to go to break. Auburn's defense last year under Kevin Steele with basically the same players, same personnel, and then Kevin Steele this year with some additional guys that they brought in through the transfer portal, like Tony Fair, to be able to run this system by Darius Knighton. They had to go out and get some extra safeties and some guys that actually can play on the 3-4 scheme on the defensive line in order to be able to do this. That's when they went and got Eku Leota and Tony Fair, guys like that, and then in the back end they needed more safeties to do what they want to do, because they do want to go 3 high a lot of times. Last year, 2020, on the ground, Auburn gave up 4.2 yards per carry and 163.4 yards on the ground per game. This year, Auburn, in terms of stopping the run, they're only giving up 3.7 yards per carry and 135 yards on the ground per game. Plain and simple, Auburn has been better at stopping the run this year, and that is a product of the scheme. That is a product of them moving to the interior. They've got the guys to do it. They're plugging up those gaps, and they've really accentuated these linebacker skills. Last year, and I said this a lot during the offseason, I felt like the linebackers were left on an island because they were running the nickel a lot. They didn't have the guys in the box to be able to stop the run, and the defensive line wasn't good enough to do it. This year, they moved guys on the inside. The linemen that they do have are capable of holding their gaps, and it's allowing these linebackers to go and do what they do really well, which is make tackles. So the numbers tell you that right there. Massive difference. Auburn's holding folks under 4 yards per carry this year and 30 yards less per game on the ground than last year. But the passing numbers are different. Last season, opposing quarterbacks completed Opposing quarterbacks this season, according to sportsreference.com, which is correct statistics, opposing quarterbacks are completing 66.7% of their passes, which is pretty bad for 230.
It's last in the SEC.
Yeah, for 235.9 pass yards per game. Last year, Auburn was giving up a total of 242 pass yards per game. So it's only like 7 yards better this year. Mm-hmm. And opposing quarterbacks completed 64.6% of their passes. So last year they gave up 7 yards worse per game, which is not a noticeable difference. But opposing quarterbacks were only completing about 2% difference. So you haven't really seen statistically too big of a drop-off in the passing defense. Last year's pass defense wasn't that great either. Still gave up nearly 65% of a completion percentage.
The secondary's rating also, according to CFB stats, is 13th in the SEC. It's only better than Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Last year it probably was in that same category.
It was
probably
in the same boat.
I mean, you break down the numbers that I just told you. I mean, the passing game has gotten, the passing defense, the secondary statistically has gotten a little bit worse this year. A little bit. But the run defense is leaps and bounds better. I mean, do you remember the A&M game last year? Horrendous. I mean, this year wasn't incredible, but they gave up nearly 300 yards last year. They only gave up about 200 this year.
They cut it down.
Hey, but a lot of that was late in the game, too.
That is true.
Is that they didn't do hardly anything through the first three quarters. So people want to hate on Derek Mason. If you look at the entire picture, in one area they've regressed, in one area they've improved. Unfortunately, the area that they've regressed continues to lose Auburn football games. But if you had stayed in the same defense that you were in last year, Auburn might have had similar defensive performances because they were giving up 200 yards a game on the ground against good teams.
I also think that there's been a lack of adjustments made this season.
Yeah.
And I think,
well, Kevin Steele didn't adjust either.
I think if you take out some of the games, if you take out the Penn State, Mississippi State game specifically, I think you see some more impressive numbers. I think that the lack of adjustments this year have been just dumbfounding.
So, wrapping up what I was just saying there, I don't think it's as bad as everybody wants to make it out to be. There's just been a couple of egregious performances, like you just pointed out.
Right.
And those two are enough. I mean, you said this, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, that those one bad performance like that Mississippi State game could put you out of a job.
It's a fireball offense.
It does end up going that way for a lot of coordinators sometimes. But I don't think it's been horrendous. I just wish people would look at it a little bit more with a little bit more measure. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little Auburn basketball as tip-off's right around the corner. 26 minutes through hour number two of On the Line. Got a couple minutes here before we head to the middle of our break. Auburn at Syracuse coming up at 3:30 p.m. on ESPN2. Auburn 5.5-point favorites against the Orange. Lance, I said earlier I feel rather uncomfortable about this game. How do you feel about it coming into it with Buddy Boeheim averaging 20.6 points per game, 42.5% from the field? Of course, KD Johnson on a tear as well for Auburn, but Syracuse can score at 80.8 points per game through the first five games of the season for them. They're giving up 74.8, so they're not doing very well on the defensive end, but this is a team that can shoot the basketball really well.
Yeah, and that's what really concerns me is through this tournament here, this Battle for Atlantis tournament, Auburn has not been very efficient defensively. They've not, I don't think the intensity's not been there, but there have been moments where Auburn has really struggled to close out on screens. I think this has been an issue for Auburn's guards so far this season. I think it's going to continue to be a problem. When a screen is set on Wendell Green or Zepp Jasper, they have a really hard time fighting through it. And that could be an issue with Syracuse's length, especially if they're going to try and get Buddy Boeheim the basketball, if they're going to try and let him shoot, if they're going to be running different things like screens and their sets. I'm curious to see who guards him, because if Flanagan was here, it would be a no-brainer. You would put Alan Flanagan on Buddy Boeheim and you would have him track him the entire game, but he's not here. So I'm just curious to see, who does Auburn put on him? Is it Jasper? Is it going to be a taller guy? I'm just curious to see. But yeah, like you said, Syracuse offensively, they can score the basketball. All five of their starters are averaging double digits. Their point guard's averaging 16 points per game. It's not just Buddy Boeheim. So it's a really talented Syracuse squad in terms of scoring. But I also like my matchup with Auburn offensively, because I think Auburn on their own is going to be able to score the basketball as well. Auburn also, something I didn't realize, they're not shooting from three particularly well so far this season, shooting just a little bit under 32%. I'd like to see that clip go up just a little bit, but overall, I think Auburn's going to be able to have their way offensively in this game. I would love to see Jabari Smith continue to work on his mid-range game, because it is definitely something that is that can work for Auburn down the road.
They're not going to face this type of defense often. The 2-3 zone, of course, trademarked by what the Orange like to do. I mean, that's selectively, that's all they do, which is going to try and slow down the game a little bit. How Auburn plays in the half court, I hate this matchup, because of this is like playing a triple option team that actually does it well.
Yeah.
This is like playing a very good triple option team, which bothers me. This is like in high school football, the every once in a while that you play someone that runs the wing T, but they're like an 8-win wing T team in high school. It's like they do it well. There's a bunch of weirdos. It's like, stop that, you know? And that's what bothers me about this Syracuse team, is that they run the 2-3 so well. They shoot the 3-ball well. I think they could provide a lot of issues for Auburn. But we'll talk about more about this game on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Hey, hey, hey. 30 minutes left in the Friday edition of On the Line. We're going to continue to talk about the Iron Bowl throughout the show. Talking some Auburn basketball here. They're about to tip off on ESPN2 against Syracuse. They have it set as a 3:35 tip-off time. We've got it on inside the studio, so we'll try and keep you updated throughout the action as Feast Week continues on ESPN and the battle for Atlantis. Auburn beat Loyola Chicago yesterday 62-53. Here's my synopsis of the battle for Atlantis for Auburn so far for this basketball team through Thanksgiving week. They got punched in the mouth in the UConn game. They responded really well with a lot of intensity. I was pleased with how they responded. If you lose a double overtime game, look, here's the reality of it. Somebody has to lose a double overtime game. Somebody has to lose. And at the end of the day, I think you got a really good performance out of both of those teams. And it's just unfortunate that somebody has to lose, because you played well enough to win. It just didn't happen. I was pleased with how I saw Auburn respond. Just like UConn, it was Auburn's best opponent that they had played up to that point. And I think you got both of those teams' best games that they've played at this point in this tournament. For UConn, they ended up losing yesterday in heartbreaking fashion to Michigan State. I thought that they should have beat Michigan State yesterday. I thought they played well enough to do that, but Michigan State closed out the ball game. It was one of those instances where one of those, you know, Michigan State was that much better than UConn down the final 2 minutes that they were able to overcome a small deficit at the end there. And then today, UConn won an OT against VCU. For Auburn yesterday against Loyola Chicago, I thought the defense was on point. If you hold a team to 53 points, you're there. Loyola Chicago has a reputation of being a really good fundamental basketball team, of doing things the right way on offense and defense. They've always been one of the higher teams in terms of assists per game, meaning they move the basketball around so well on offense. And then on defense, they've always had one of the higher defensive efficiencies, according to KenPom.com. That is a defense that makes you have to work for your buckets. I liked that Auburn had to work through some offensive issues in the first half of that game to be able to grind through a slower-paced game in the second half, and they proved to me that Auburn can win in those half-court defensive affairs. That game was played at the exact tempo that Loyola wanted it at, and Auburn still beat them by 90. Loyola is a good basketball team.
Well, I'll say in this matchup, I think they're going to have a different pace of play, because Syracuse's average possession length is top 50 nationally.
Yep.
They like to pick up the pace just a little bit. They also are the fifth tallest team in the nation, according to KenPom.com, so that could pose an issue for Auburn as well. And then something that has also was an issue in the UConn game is Auburn offensively, they have a lot of blocks. They're currently 261st nationally in block percentage on offense. And you look at Syracuse's defense, 43rd nationally in blocks per possession. So It could be an issue inside for Auburn. They're going to have to shoot out of it. And this is what concerns me about Auburn shooting. Again, 31.5% from three, like I mentioned earlier, on average for the Tigers. Syracuse, on the other hand, is shooting 38%, and Auburn's giving up 36%. So I think it's going to be the tale of the three ball in this game. Can Syracuse continue to knock it down? Can Auburn keep up with the pace of play that Syracuse wants to have? Can they slow it down? How is Auburn going to handle the half-court offense is also a really important question. Like you were talking about before we went to break, this is not necessarily a favorable matchup. At least it doesn't look like for Auburn.
Likewise, I think Auburn can pose some issues for Syracuse in this game. For those people out there wondering, this is the fifth place game in the Battle for Atlantis tournament. Look, if you want to beat the zone, run the zone. Make them beat them down the floor before they can get into their zone defense. So I think likewise that fits to what Auburn wants to do. Auburn wants to run a transition.
Yep.
So if Auburn can beat these guys on transition, I think they will have success. Another thing that would be beneficial for Auburn, try and create some fouls and get to the charity stripe. Zone defenses don't typically foul a whole bunch. If you can get some dead ball points, that's going to help you out a little bit. Also, if you can shoot the three ball well, this is an even front zone. So if you can... if you can get some spacing out on the wing and start dropping some threes, which we know this team can do, I think it fits into what Auburn wants to do on the offensive end. But likewise on defense, I hate the fact that Syracuse shoots the three ball so well. Here's what you know about Syracuse every year. Every single season, Syracuse on offense is going to shoot the three really well, and then on defense they're going to run the 2-3 zone and they're going to make you work. I'm actually kind of curious to see. I'm actually shocked that they are playing a little bit quicker of a tempo than we're used to seeing out of typical Syracuse teams.
Because we've seen in the past, they are typically a slower team on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, kind of middle of the pack, but on defense, they want to grind you out.
Right. So I'm just curious to see how Auburn operates in this game against, like I was saying earlier. Do they want to play more up-tempo with Syracuse? Do they want to try and slow the game down? I just don't know if trying to slow it down against this 2-3 zone in the half court is going to benefit the Tigers down the road. And like you said, look, if you can either draw fouls or shoot out of this zone, if you're playing hot, let the three go. We've seen Wendell Green Jr. in this tournament get really hot from beyond the arc. Let's see if we can get him going. Walker Kessler, let's see if he can knock down a couple of threes. We've seen him in this tournament, I think in both of the games that he's played in, knock down a three, something he had not done up until this point in the season. So yeah, I think Auburn's going to try and shoot out of it, and they're going to try and get to the foul line. And I think personally, to answer my own question earlier, I think they are going to elect to play a little bit more up-tempo because, like you pointed out just a minute ago, it's if you aren't shooting out of the 2-3 zone, try and get down the court before the 2-3 zone can get set.
And look, they're giving up a lot of points. Colgate, toothpaste. Beat you 185.
You gave up 100 points to toothpaste?
They lost. They lost by 15 to Colgate on their own floor.
To toothpaste?
They lost to Colgate, 185.
It's not even the best brand.
And then they give up 84 to Arizona State last night in a game that they controlled from start to finish, but they won 92-84. So you know they can score, and honestly, Syracuse wants to play the game at this pace too. They do. But I think that Auburn, from what they want, you should focus more on what you want to do rather than trying to make Syracuse uncomfortable. On the defensive end, Auburn has been excellent at forcing turnovers.
Yep.
You forced Loyola Chicago, a team that does not turn the basketball over a whole bunch. You forced them into over 20 turnovers. You forced UConn into over 20 turnovers. That's why you were able to come back in that game and put yourself in a position to win. Auburn is forcing a lot of turnovers, whether it be by the steal, which they have a very high steal percentage as well compared to most teams in college basketball. And Auburn is getting it done on defense from an efficiency standpoint in terms of being able to turn defense into offense. They are giving themselves a major boost on that end of the floor. Opposing teams may shoot an okay field goal percentage against Auburn, but efficiency also takes into account your ability to create steals and blocks, which takes away possessions from opposing teams. So I like the way Auburn's playing right now on defense. I think they've got a great intensity. I think Auburn's the more talented team, and I think that's why they're favored. The only thing I hate about this game is Syracuse's prowess at being able to shoot threes beyond the arc, and I think that's going to make this. I think that could end up being the equalizer between Auburn getting extra possessions in terms of forcing steals and Auburn being able to defend the paint. If Auburn doesn't play well, and if Auburn doesn't play efficiently in the offensive half court, Syracuse's three-point shooting could be a great equalizer in this game because three is better than two, and I think Auburn's just going to have to make the most of their possessions.
And look, we saw that in the UConn game, right? We saw UConn shoot a terrific percentage from beyond the arc, but it was the turnovers that really cost them. It's the reason why Auburn was able to climb back into that game and send it to overtime. So Auburn has to be able to create a little bit of pressure on the defensive end and continue to create turnovers as they have so far this season in order to stay in this game, I believe.
Also, crash the glass. Auburn's got guys that know how to offensive rebound. Walker yep. Kessler comes from the school of offensive rebounding in college basketball, which is North Carolina. That is, you know, teams have their own individual identities, their own DNA. I just said Syracuse's is the zone defense and three-point shooting. North Carolina's is a quicker tempo and offensive rebounding. It's getting yourself extra possessions. Walker Kessler is as adept as we've seen at Auburn in recent years and being able to get extra possessions for Auburn because of offensive rebounds. You're so long in the zone defense, and right now, the way that Syracuse has opened this ball game today, they're actually running with a 3-2 zone. You don't have guys down low to rebound. And zone defense, whether it's the 2-3 or the 3-2, it is going to put you at a disadvantage in terms of getting closeouts on possessions. If Auburn wants to go and get offensive rebounds in this game and they put a lot of intensity on the offensive end, they could go and close out and get some of those and clean the glass and get some of those offensive rebounds.
It's been really important for Auburn this season because you look at the defensive rebounds, I mean, they're just about dead even with their opponent. But when it comes to the offensive glass, they have been hounding teams. And like you mentioned, Walker Kessler has been a huge part of that. So, yeah, getting second chance opportunities against this zone is going to be really important.
Let's talk about the Iron Bowl tomorrow. Of course, there's some other great college basketball going on, and we will get you set with that throughout the rest of this hour. Alabama and Drake have already tipped off. Drake is beating number 10 Alabama 8-6 with 15:56 left in the first. And Auburn right now is trailing to Syracuse 10-6 with 15:56 left in the first half as well. Man, both of those games right there on the same pace with each other right now. Earlier today in college basketball, Baylor beat Michigan State to win Battle for Atlantis. Dayton upset number 4 Kansas 74-73. Already let you know that number 22 UConn beat VCU 70-63. Then there's some other good college basketball games coming up tonight, including the two best teams that I believe are in college basketball, that being Gonzaga and Duke.
Yep, absolutely. So Duke was not a very good basketball team last season, but they have reloaded, and it's very similar to the way that Kentucky's operating right now. We got to see actually those two teams play each other earlier in the season. They have got some really talented guys. Specifically inside for Duke, I'm really excited to see the way they match up against Gonzaga. Gonzaga's got talent all over the floor, but it's specifically Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren in the front court. How does Duke match up with those two players? Because they are excellent. It's going to be a really fun battle tonight.
Duke can't shoot. Duke does not have that many three-point shooters. That is a team. This reminds me of some of those Kentucky teams that couldn't shoot threes, but they could run the floor, get into the paint and whatnot. And I don't care who is on the other team. Chet Holmgren's blocking your shot.
Yep.
And so they're gonna have a hard time scoring down low. So I would give the advantage to Gonzaga in this game, but it should be. I hope it is going to be better than that UCLA game. Looking at some college football scores right now, number 4 Cincinnati is in a fight with ECU 7-3, about midway through the second quarter. They're on their own 42-yard line with a first down. ECU led at the end of the first, I believe, 3-0. I said this earlier, and I jinxed it for Nebraska, apparently. It was a 15-point lead for Nebraska. I thought that might have been insurmountable for that Iowa offense. It was not. Iowa's up 28-21 over Nebraska right now with a minute and 12 left. It's Nebraska football on their own 45 with a third down at 3. UAB is up on UTEP 28-17 midway through the third quarter. Arkansas and Missouri are tied at 3 with 8:43 left in the second quarter. Arkansas football at the 50-yard line. Gus Malzahn and the UCF Knights are tied up with South Florida 7 apiece in the second quarter, early stages of that second quarter. And then Utah currently at the end of the first quarter. Of course, they've already punched their tickets to the Pac-12 title game, so they don't need to beat Colorado, but they are trailing 3-0 to the 4-7 Buffaloes, whereas Utah is trying to get out to 9-3 and potentially punch their tickets to a Rose Bowl. Yep. Because they did just eat Oregon's lunch last week, just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at UCF. I mean, if they finish the year 8-4, and look, we were talking about this earlier. We're a Florida and a Missouri, Florida loss, a Missouri win away from Auburn going to play Gus Malzahn in the Birmingham Bowl. I mean, we are so close, guys. We're so close. It could be one of the greatest storylines of the postseason outside of the playoff.
You said a Florida loss and a Missouri win?
Yes. Florida loss, Missouri win, Auburn loss. That would like 100% put it in the realm of possibility. Even if Missouri loses this weekend, I still think that if one of those events occur, Auburn still has a legitimate shot to go to the Birmingham Bowl.
Wasn't it Sam Pittman talking trash in the preseason at Media Days about that Arkansas-Missouri rivalry, or was it the other way around?
It was Drinkwitz talking trash about it, how he was asked, like, do people even care about it? And he was talking about, like, I can't remember the last time they beat us. So, I mean, it's obviously really important to our players. So we'll have to see. Yeah,
He's coming up with he's backing up his talk. It's 3-3.
Let me tell you something. You look at Eli Drinkwitz, he does not look like he is a Division I football coach. Like, just
doesn't look like he would talk trash.
He doesn't look like he would talk
trash.
But
he has dealt some blows to coaches recently. I mean, look what he did to Florida last week.
He can throw shade with the best of them. I like his personality, man. I think he's going to be, if he sticks around in the SEC, he's going to be a fun coach.
That is hilarious. You're right, man. He does not look like he should be talking trash, but he's been dealing some savage blows to coaches in the last year.
I love it.
Sam Pittman at Media Days, and then to Dan Mullen last week after they beat him.
Yep, I absolutely love it. I remember power ranking the SEC after Media Days, and I put him in like my top four because I'm like, man, he's so awesome.
Iron Bowl tomorrow. We'll start this right here, and then we will finish the show with this. But what can Auburn do to win this game? We talked earlier about how, look, you and I are both picking Alabama to win this game, and we'll give you our score prediction in the next segment. We've given many a reason why Alabama's going to win this game. We were talking about Auburn's shortcomings pretty much everywhere around the quarterback position. I don't attribute the quarterback position to be the reason why Auburn will lose tomorrow. It's the other positions and the other shortcomings by the coaching staff why I say that Auburn will lose the game. But how can Auburn win this game tomorrow?
Well, they're going to have to try and put a little bit of pressure on Alabama's offensive line. We were breaking down the numbers earlier. They have a lot of negative plays. They allow Bryce Young to get sacked quite a bit, actually, more than you might think. I think you have to be able to send pressure in this game to affect this Alabama passing offense and see if you can get Bryce Young, Jameson Williams, John Metchie out of sync. It's going to be very important. I also think Roger McCreary is going to have to play a fantastic game, regardless of how Auburn elects to attack this Alabama receiver room, whether that be with zone coverage, whether that we'd be with a little bit of man-to-man. He's going to have to step up against one of Alabama's targets, either Jameson Williams or John Metchie. Tank Bigsby is also going to have to be efficient in this game. I think a really important aspect of this game is time of possession. How long does Auburn keep the ball away from these explosive playmakers for Alabama? I think Tank Bigsby having a really good day on the ground could be a benefactor of this Auburn offense and just kind of slowing the game down. And then Alabama's secondary, how do they play against T.J. Finley and these receivers? Because like you mentioned earlier, this Auburn passing offense, they're throwing for about 250 a game. So I'm trying to figure out how efficient can Auburn be in this game with T.J. Finley. I think they can dink and dunk a little bit on this Alabama secondary. They're seventh in the SEC in passing yards allowed per game. So we may see T.J. Finley, while he may not be necessarily explosive, I think we could also see him have a more efficient day than he did against South Carolina. And then finally, I think another thing that we have to be looking at is, does the luck finally come back for Auburn? This is something that we've harped on for about a month now. The luck and the breaks that Auburn feels like they've gotten in the past, it feels like Auburn's gotten in the past, it's just they've not been there this season. Do we get to see a little bit of that in this matchup? We'll just have to see. But yeah, those are some of the reasons. Those are some of the things that need to go Auburn's way for them to win this game.
I think Auburn's going to be able to run the ball. I hope that they can build off. If Auburn's going to win this game, they're going to be able to run the ball. So if we're talking about reasons why Auburn will win, it will have been that they were able to run the ball effectively from start to finish. Now, how does Alabama adjust to that when Auburn does start establishing it on the ground? They'll probably start committing more guys to the ground game, start bringing more pressure, and then it'll come down to T.J. Finley delivering accurate strikes to his receivers on the outside, and then them coming up with big plays on their own. We've seen, and last week was an example, and the A&M game was an example, we have seen Alabama's defensive backs, when they've elected to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, they have given up big plays.
Yep.
Last week, they gave up a lot of them. Auburn's receivers have the ability to do it. If they come out there, catch the football on their home field, and T.J. Finley delivers accurate strikes to them, they're going to have a chance to make big plays. But in order for Auburn to win this game, they're going to have to establish it on the ground first. If they're able to control the clock with the ground game, they could have some success on the offensive end of the field. I almost said offensive end of the floor because we're watching some basketball in here as well. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up our thoughts on the Iron Bowl when we come back. Last segment of the week here Rivalry Week on the line. Noah Gardner and Lance Dawn with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. We got 3 minutes left in the show. Going to give you our Iron Bowl predictions here coming up. I'm going to go ahead and give my prediction. I think Auburn loses, but I think they put up a fight better than most people do. The line set at 20.5. I can't remember who said this. Lee Corso said this last week. It was the Alabama-Arkansas game, and it was about 20.5 points. And Lee Corso said that Alabama would not cover, but they would win by 19. And I think that's probably something that you're looking at here. I think that Alabama-Auburn will end up being close for a little bit. It'll be like one of those 2016, 2015 Iron Bowls where they can't do a whole lot on offense, but they're at least sticking around. The defense is helping them stay in it, and then Alabama will blow the top off by the end of the game.
Yep.
Let's head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390. We got 2 minutes left in the show. Spectre, glad you got in here with us. Do you have a prediction for us tomorrow?
Yes. I believe it's going to be a tie.
Let's do it.
No, I don't see much hope in us. But, however, if Harsin loses this game, he'll be the first coach to succeed another coach with a losing season. Every coach since Shug Jordan has done better than the previous coach.
Interesting.
In the first year.
Interesting. Or did about the same, because didn't Pat Dye have the same record as Barfield's last year?
Yeah, but it was much different.
Yeah,
difference was SEC. Pat Dye was 2-4. Barfield was 0-6.
Gotcha. Yeah, and the vibe was a lot different back then too, because he was competing.
Yeah. But Harsin, if he loses this game, he'll be the first coach to do worse than his successor.
That is a very interesting fact there. Spectre, we're about to have to get off the show. I hope you have a good weekend. War Eagle to you as well, Spectre. I heard it on the way out. Lance, quick prediction. We're about to get out of here.
45-20 is my final score. I think it'll be close. I think they score 20. I think it'll be close for a little bit. But like you said, I think Alabama at the end of the game in that fourth quarter, I think they blow the top off. I think it's going to be just a lot of chunk plays.
If somehow Auburn can contain the explosive pass plays, not give up any big plays in the aerial attack, and Auburn can establish the ground game, I think it will be a very entertaining game. But that is a big task on both of those fronts, a very big task. But that finishing our conversation that we had in our previous segment, that's the blueprint. No big plays, run the football. If you can do both of those teams well, you'll have a shot. You'll have a shot. That's it for the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you on Monday, same time, same place. You know where to find us.